Hello everybody, my name is Owen, and this is Owen's Guide to Talk for Wednesday, 16th of February, 2022. Today's episode, we've got plenty of things to talk about. Realme has dropped the 9 Pro and the 9 Pro Plus. Along with that, Redmi, on the other hand, is obviously showing off the K50, and we've got a look at the K50 Gaming Edition, which has been released in China, so we're going to definitely talk about that. Plus, towards the end, Sony has released a new kind of earbuds that are pretty interesting. In that they're not necessarily earbuds, but yeah, they use technology from bone conduction headsets. So that's pretty interesting, and much more. It's obviously gadget talk, so it's all about hardware in a way. So yeah, without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? First up, amongst the new devices launched today, we're going to talk about the Realme 9 Pro and 9 Pro Plus. One of the first models from the Realme 9 series that finally come out, and obviously Realme has finally released the 9 series after a bit of a delay late last year because of the supply chain crisis that we kind of have right now, the shortages going on for components, which have kind of made it difficult for Realme to release new models and ship them out very quickly. But obviously, that long wait, you could say, has been worth it, because we have the Pro and the Pro Plus, which obviously are the top of the line of the Realme 9 series. We don't know about the Realme 9 regular and the 9i, but I would suspect that they're planning to obviously show that off later on down the road. But the Realme 9 Pro is pretty interesting as a device. To start with, you got the regular Pro and then the Pro Plus. Now, really to sum it up, there are a couple of differences in a way. The regular 9 Pro, the cheaper of the two Pro phones, features 6.6-inch, 120Hz LCD display, not AMOLED on Redmi Note 11. For example, Redmi Note 11 series overwhelmingly has AMOLED displays, but then again, I'm sure Xiaomi is able to secure supplies of AMOLEDs in bulk in a way, so they'll be able to bring that price down, but Realme can't. But here they're using LCD, but it is a high refresh rate display, so that's pretty interesting. And you get a side-mounted fingerprint scanner on the power button in a way. Along with that, you have a Snapdragon 695 5G processor, a 64 megapixel main camera that basically can take night mode pics, 8 megapixel ultrawide, 2 megapixel macro, 16 megapixel selfie camera, 5000 mAh battery, 33 watt fast charging. It comes with Android 12, Realme's skin of Android, Realme 3 UI 3.0 in a way, and yeah, and has that light shift gradient, which I'll mention later on in a way. And then if we talk about the Pro Plus, which is the other of the two phones, it is more interesting. You get a Dimensity 920 5G processor, 6.43-inch, 90Hz FHD Plus OLED display. So this is a real good value. This is a real value for money device in a way. But you only get a 4500 mAh battery, but in return you get 60 watt fast charging, which is a benefit. Stereo speakers, dual SIM support in a way, which can do 5G, and an in-display fingerprint sensor that apparently, and this actually wasn't teased before already, could measure your heart rate using the thumb, seeing the pulse from your thumb. Again, I'm sure it is taking a picture of your fingerprint. Again, they've added this cool feature so you could see your heart rate. Obviously, it's not as accurate as actual measurement machines, but again, it's nice to know, and it's a nice feature regardless. The 9 Pro Plus, being the fancier of the two, has a 50 megapixel main IMX766 processor, or sensor you could say, at the back, an 8 megapixel ultrawide sensor, and 2 megapixel macro, along with the equal selfie camera, that is. Oh, and the primary sensor, fun fact, is the same main sensor that can be found on the Find X3 Pro from Oppo and the GT2 Pro from Realme, which is interesting. This has an aperture of f1.8 and has a sensor size of 1 by 1.56 inches, which is pretty interesting. And you have a 16 megapixel selfie camera, like on the Pro, potentially. But yeah, aside from that, really, it's basically it's a slightly faster variant of the 9 Pro in a way, moving from the Snapdragon to the Dimensity chip, which is interesting. As for memory, on the 9 Pro, you have It'll only be available in 128GB variant with either 6 or 8GB of RAM, whereas the 9 Pro Plus comes with 128 and 256GB of storage, and 6 and 8GB variants with 6 and 8GB of RAM out of the gate. So that's pretty interesting nonetheless. More interesting part is the color that Realme has offered on the 9 Pro Plus, which is called Sunrise Blue. So you get regular green and black in a way, but you have Sunrise Blue. Apparently this is a new kind of gradient color as a photochromic layer. It changes from blue to a pinkish hue in a matter of seconds when exposed to UV or sunlight, which is pretty interesting. It needs 3 seconds to make that switch, and obviously has that pinkish tone, which I've actually seen a photo. It looks pretty cool. It probably would look cooler in person. It's a nice party trick, obviously, and it gives your phone a unique look in a way from a regular silver or black. You know, if you have a translucent case, you can see the back of your phone in a way, and it'll come back to a regular color in 5 minutes, hence the name Sunrise Blue. So that is a pretty neat trick that this phone has. So pretty cool if you ask me. So again, these are two pretty interesting mid-range phones, but obviously everyone wants to know how much it will cost. And good news, the Realme 9 Pro will start at $319 for the base spec, 6GB of RAM, 128GB of storage, and obviously the Pro Plus will start from $379. Obviously not bad compared to what you can get from Samsung or Xiaomi, which are obviously the main target competition. In the UK, the 9 Pro base spec, kind of, which will be in the UK, will start from £300, so £299, so for the 8GB of RAM, 128GB of storage. And then the 9 Pro Plus, which apparently will only be available in the UK with the Maxdot variant, in a way, will start from £349. So, again, it is pretty interesting what you have here. If you live in India, the base spec 9 Pro will start from 17,999 Indian rupees. That would be about 35,000 to 36,000 Pakistani rupees. That would be about $240 US. And then the Pro Plus will cost a base spec starting 24,999 Indian rupees. That would be close to 50,000 Pakistani rupees, given, you know, a base exchange rate of about 2 Indian rupees to 1 Pakistani rupee in a way. No. 1 Indian rupee to 2 Pakistani rupees, so if you double it, so it'd be about 50,000 PKR, or about $333 approximately. So it's pretty interesting. Now, if you want to get the Realme 9 Pro and 9 Pro Plus, the Pro will be available in the UK from February 23rd. That's basically next week, hopefully. And in India, you can get the Pro also from February 23rd. If you want the Pro Plus, you can also get it next week from February 21st in India. If you're in the UK, if you want the Pro Plus, it'll be available from March the 4th. So that's pretty interesting nonetheless. One thing we kind of don't know is when they'll be releasing this phone. These phones in other regions, so we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, you could check with your local Realme page if they have any information. If they got nothing to report, then obviously it'll be available a couple of months down the road in a way. So it's pretty interesting. Now, if you think about it, these phones are interesting. It's obviously Realme's answer to the Redmi Note series, in a way. The main Realme phones have competed with the Redmi Note, in a way. This is obviously their answer to the Redmi Note 11. It is interesting, but you basically, the Pro and the Pro Plus are two different sets of phones for two different sets of audiences. That's why I probably want to make a point here. The Pro is basically a regular, nice mid-range phone for the masses, in a way. It's basically not taking risks, and it's not really, it's not pushing the edge, it's not going over the edge, it's not going over the cliff in terms of performance, in terms of the cameras, whereas the Pro Plus over here is kind of the enthusiast phone. It's the phone for all the smartphone, for all the Android geeks out there that love raw performance, top-notch cameras. Again, interesting party tricks, you could say, for Android fanboys, including that fingerprint sensor that can actually double as a heart rate sensor, and that interesting gradient glass black that you'll get if you're getting it with Sunrise Blue, sort of. So it seems that Remedy is trying to obviously sell two different phones to two different audiences. So one's basically for the masses and one's for the enthusiasts. The Pro Plus is basically for the enthusiasts in a way. With the Dimensity 920 over here, you have more raw horsepower than the Snapdragon 695. And phones with the 695 don't really have great performance per se. And in terms of camera performance, it doesn't obviously improve that in a way. So the having that Dimensity 920 means that you could pack solid cameras. And over here, as I said, Realme has decided to offer a quality main sensor on the Pro Plus. As I said, we'll have to wait and see for the reviews. The reviews will probably tell a different story. If you're asking for my recommendation, it's kind of hard to call. It's kind of hard to tell. You know, it's too close to call kind of at this point of time. I mean, I'd probably wait a few weeks and then obviously see all the reviews and see which one makes sense. But just from the outset, just from reading over the specs and what Realme obviously have in the broader picture, the Pro is basically for the rest of humanity, kind of. It's for those who basically want a phone to browse WhatsApp, to browse social media, make TikToks, kind of, you know. And then the Pro Plus kind of is that decent mid-range phone that is top-notch. I'm a Realme fan. I'm a Redmi fanboy. I'm a Xiaomi fanboy. So again, I can't really give a solid recommendation. It's too close to call, kind of. But the Pro Plus looks to be a bit faster than the Pro, in my own opinion. So again, that's just my own humble opinion. You probably have your opinion. You know, if you support one of the two brands, you may disagree with me. That's totally fine. We can all agree to disagree in a way. So but yeah, the 9 Pro Plus looks interesting in a way. Alrighty. Moving on, Redmi. So Redmi obviously in China sort of is showing off the K50 series. The K40 obviously has been a hit in China and obviously has been released outside of China. It's different from basically the K50, the K40 series has kind of been released outside of China as a whole bunch of Poco phones, which is interesting. And they've sold like hotcakes in a way. The main K40 has been sold in around the world as the Poco F3. It's a really good phone, and as I said, it's really a fast phone, and again, it packs a lot. It really punches way well above its weight, being a Redmi in a way. Now we have the K50 series, which is dropping, and Xiaomi has obviously shown off the K50 gaming edition. Gaming phones are pretty big in China. Mobile gaming is big. We know how it goes, you know. Games from Tencent and all are very, very popular in China. Mobile gaming is obviously more popular than console gaming in China. That's obviously expected. And we do get plenty of gaming phones, but this one's pretty interesting. It's the K50, but obviously it's quite gaming-oriented. With a design that's supposed to give you that black magic, that red magic vibe, kind of, if you know the red magic, which is a pretty interesting phone in a way. So the K50 gaming phone, in a way, the gaming edition, basically, as we'll call it, has the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1, 6.67-inch, 120Hz flat OLED display, interestingly enough. So you got an 8 Gen 1 here. This is what they mean when they say gaming. 4700 mAh battery, 120W fast charging, wired, that is, in a way. 64MP main sensor with Sony IMX686 sensor on the main. 8MP ultrawide and 2MP macro, 20MP selfie camera. If you're buying a gaming phone, you don't really care about the camera at this point. It's just to take photos and do the odd social media video, you know, to post on TikTok or Douyin, which is the Chinese version of TikTok, kind of. You have a power button, power key / fingerprint sensor, Gorilla Glass Victus, haptic feedback, which is improved. Obviously, it's a gaming phone, so you definitely need that. Wi-Fi 6E support, NFC, and comes with MIUI 13, which is obviously based on Android 12, hopefully, so that's pretty cool in a way. So that's the gaming edition, kind of. Now it focuses more on gaming and less on being just a regular flagship, so it's got that stealthy design and it's pretty cool in a way. And it comes in some stunning colors: black, a kind of blue, so a light blue, a silver, and And being a Formula One fan, I was surprised. But surprised but not surprised, kind of. And Redmi is also offering a Mercedes AMG, a Petronas, Mercedes AMG Petronas F1 Edition K50 gaming phone. So it's gonna have the iconic Silver Arrows team colors. It'll be in the black and silver and blue and turquoise blue that Mercedes is based on. It has those colors, and obviously it'll feature UI and again some extra touches, being that it's a limited edition phone, obviously featuring the iconic 8-time constructor champion Formula One team. So pretty interesting in a way. So it's a cool special edition, surprisingly. Now, this is not the first time Xiaomi's worked with Mercedes' Formula One team for a special edition device or product. Xiaomi has made scooters, limited edition scooters, that obviously are branded with the Mercedes AMG Formula One team. So that's pretty cool. So, but this is the first time they're bringing it to phones. So that's pretty cool in a way. The K50 gaming comes with either 8 or 12 gigabytes of RAM, 128 or 256 gigabytes of storage. Base spec will start from 3,299 yuan, $520-ish. And then maxed out, the phone will cost about 3,899 yuan, so that'll be $615. And if you're wondering, and if you're a Formula One fan and you want a Redmi and you're basically in that camp, you love Lewis Hamilton, you're also a George Russell fanboy, you love a Redmi, I'm also in that camp. If you want the K50 Gaming Mercedes AMG Petronas Formula One limited edition phone, a highly unlikely collaboration. Ironically, smartphones and Formula One are not really a rare commodity, you could say. I still remember McLaren's car did feature OnePlus a few years ago. So, you know, OnePlus did some limited edition McLaren phones. So that's pretty cool. But still, if you want the Mercedes AMG F1 limited edition, it's maxed out spec, unique finish. It will set you back 4,199 yuan, about $662. Basically chump change. It's basically, what, $200 cheaper than the S22? So if you're an F1 fan and you want a fast gaming phone, kind of great for PUBG, great for Free Fire, there is the Mercedes edition K50 gaming. Now I don't know if this limited edition will be sold on AliExpress or Gearbest, but that we'll have to see. But I definitely get it, being a fan of Mercedes. In a way, it looks pretty cool. It obviously doesn't add anything extra other than the touches. You get the finishes, which is pretty cool. But yeah, you could see from my voice, I'm pretty psyched of this. Now, we don't know much about the regular K50. They're gonna obviously reveal it down the road later on. But it's looking to be a solid phone. It's promising to be a solid high-end flagship, nonetheless. Now, as I said, I want to stress this straight away for those listening, and obviously you probably got interested because of the limited edition. The K50 Gaming is releasing first in China, so the global variant will probably be some Poco model that we've not yet seen. But again, pretty interesting nonetheless. And now we're kind of going to move on mentioning a bunch of things here. Realme has announced, obviously, for Mobile World Congress that's happening in Barcelona next week. They're going to do a launch event showing off the GT2 series. And obviously, they'll announce the global availability for it, for Europe, for the rest of the world, outside of China, kind of, on February 28th. So be on the lookout if you're interested for the GT2, that is. On the other hand, Oppo has announced that it's collaborating with Hasselblad. We've kind of mentioned it a couple of episodes ago. Obviously, people have forgotten about it by now. Oppo is obviously teaming up with Hasselblad for the Find X5, for the cameras on the Find X5 series. Now, what to expect? Kind of, it's like their current collaboration with OnePlus. Expect obviously some tweaks with algorithms. You know, custom algorithms, custom color grading. UI, custom UI sort of. So it's like what they do at OnePlus in a way. I mean, it's kind of ironic given that Oppo and OnePlus are obviously working much closer together, especially having a unified skin of Android, which is interesting. So not surprising, but again, it's a pretty interesting development. But I would expect the Find X 5 to be available next month, so that's pretty interesting regardless. And according to 91 Mobiles and a tipster, Yogesh Barar, the OnePlus 10 Pro could be launching in India next month. And on top of that, OnePlus obviously could, and again, this is according to Android Authority, OnePlus could be announcing that the 10 Pro, the launch, the release date for the OnePlus 10 Pro on February 17th. Now, we don't know much about the regular 10, the OnePlus 10, but I'm sure they're going to obviously show it off tomorrow, sort of. And speaking of tomorrow, the OnePlus Nord CE 2 will be launching. So they're going to show off the OnePlus Nord CE 2. We already know, OnePlus has kind of announced a whole bunch of things about the phone, teasing some of the specs here. Especially, it's going to be a solid mid-ranger. Expect a Snapdragon chip under the hood, along with a solid camera. We kind of see three cameras here, but again, apparently there'll be solid sensors. As I said, it competes in the mid-range segment, obviously against Samsung, against Redmi and Realme. So that's interesting. Apparently, it'll apparently support up to 1 terabyte of SD card storage overwhelmingly. So that's pretty cool in a way. So we'll find out obviously tomorrow, sort of. So the launch event's tomorrow. But obviously we will mention the phone on next week's episode. So if you don't want to miss that, obviously subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss another episode. But yeah, it's pretty interesting in a way. Now, the Steam Deck will be available from next week, from February 25th. So that's pretty cool. And iFixit have announced that they're going to be selling authorized replacement parts for the Steam Deck, making it easy for owners to sort of switch out components like the battery, thumbsticks, and all that kind of stuff, which is pretty interesting in a way. This is obviously on top of iFixit doing a full-on typical teardown of the device. This is promising. The Steam Deck, say what you will, but the Steam Deck looks to be pretty promising as a device, given what you're getting here for your money as a device. So, as I said, it's pretty interesting nonetheless. All right, I kind of want to mention this, interestingly. Sony has created a new kind of wireless earbuds, which are not really like in-ear or over-ear earbuds in a way. It's a unique design, kind of. So the Link Buds are pretty interesting in a way. So you have... So the Link Buds are unique in a way. So you have an open ring design. The idea with this design is that what Sony wants you to do, so, and what I'm guessing is this is obviously using the same technology as bone conduction headsets, like the Bose frames and all, which basically go to your ear and move that audio down through your nerves, kind of, so it gets to your ears. It's pretty interesting in a way. So, and again, apparently, the idea here is that Sony wants to create sort of a pair of earbuds where if you're out and about, you're traveling, you're going on a walk, which actually happens quite a lot. You're walking around, sort of, and you want to hear the outside world easily. Now, Sony's earbuds and headphones kind of have features you can sort of hover over the cup to hear the outside world. But here, you're basically able to get some ambient audio. And also, I'm guessing that they want some air to sort of be in. So want your ears to be kind of comfortable, and that they're not blocked by the ear tips or cushions, which is pretty interesting in a way. So it's pretty interesting what you have here with the Link Buds. Interestingly, design wise, they sort of look like Polo Mints, if you've ever had those. It's like a mint that you eat. It's like a circle, and imagine you if the AirPods and Polo Mints had a baby, then this would be the this would basically be the Link Buds in a way. But yeah, the open ring means that essentially you get to hear whatever you're listening to wirelessly via Bluetooth, but as you get to hear the outside world in a nutshell. So That's pretty cool. In terms of software support, you have, in terms of software features, you have wide area taps, so you're able to tap, obviously, in front of that ring to play and pause and to skip, to take calls and all in, and obviously to access Google Assistant and Alexa from your phone, obviously, so that's pretty cool in a way. And on top of that, software-wise, you have, it supports Google's FastPair and Microsoft's SwiftPair functionality, so you can connect it to your computer. Alexa and Google Assistant are supported here easily without an issue. And yeah, they've also have some software integrations too with various software in a way. So that's pretty cool. Nonetheless, 360 reality audio, which is Sony's sort of like virtual surround sound tech, is supported on these two, which is pretty interesting. IPX4 support water resistance. In terms of battery life, you get 5.5 hours of use. This is obviously based on continuous music playback. Obviously, any other features, it would obviously vary the battery life. But the charging case comes up to 12 hours of battery life, so you can charge them probably almost twice, kind of. You can have two charges. And with a 10-minute charge, you get 90 minutes of playtime, so that's pretty cool nonetheless. If you're wondering about price, the Link Buds will cost £150, about $180 US, and will be available later this month. So, pretty interesting, nonetheless. And it looks pretty cool, kind of, not gonna lie. I'm sure that it has an intended audience, kind of, which is those kind of people who probably wear earbuds all day long. I'd love to, obviously, try, I'd love to try this, kind of, in a way. But the Link Buds are a pretty interesting concept. Basically for those who probably wear the headphones or earbuds all the time, and they want something that is, again, comfortable. At the same time, they have access to the audio, which is pretty interesting. Probably folks like myself. I mean, I have my headphones on almost all the time, kind of, to listen to podcasts, to listen to radio, to probably watch videos. I mean, this looks like an interesting product. Obviously, it's a little bit cheaper than the XM4 earbuds, kind of, which is interesting. But I clearly think that it has an intended audience, kind of, which is obviously which are basically those who wear their earbuds all day long, from start to finish. So yeah, it is. It's but then again, it's a pretty interesting earbud, nonetheless. This is pretty interesting. Google has released a new version of Chrome OS. It's basically a port of Chrome OS, but obviously now for older computers, called Chrome OS Flex. I mean, I'm sure it's Google trying not to flex on Microsoft and Linux, going like, oh, we have a nicer OS that can run on older laptops. But basically, this is for older computers and Macs, which cannot run newer versions of Windows or Mac OS. But they can run Chrome OS comfortably, which is basically Chrome browser and a whole bunch of web apps and cloud-based apps and services, which is pretty interesting. So this is actually based off a software made by a company called Neverware, which is called Cloud Ready, which basically they made a version of Chrome OS that could be installed on PCs, on old computers for personal users, and for businesses or schools, which wanted to take the older computers and repurpose them into proper functioning, working, networked devices connected to the internet, accessing cloud services, online learning, and obviously charged the fee. And it was a lucrative business, and then Google obviously bought it last year in 2020. And obviously now we're seeing that acquisition sort of come to fruition in a way, coming to good use with Chrome OS Flex. This is a pretty handy product. I probably know a fair few old laptops that actually have that would love to have something like Chrome OS Flex. So the way it is that you obviously flash your hard drive, your flash drive, your USB flash drive with this OS installed on an old laptop, obviously using BIOS and all, and apparently we installed in a few minutes, so that's pretty interesting. Now, certain devices, not all old laptops will get all the features of Chrome OS. So it's obviously a version of Chrome OS. So you get the core functionality, you'll get the key features that make Chrome OS unique and probably better than some than full-fledged desktop OSs for casual tasks and for those trying to get online and basically do some work through a web browser. So do keep that in mind, and obviously you won't get all the features of Chrome OS in a way, so that's something to note. But Chrome OS is a pretty cool operating system, if you ask me. And again, it's cool to see Google offering a operating system that you can install. Now, obviously, this is an early access. This is not a final version. So you might have issues. But then again, I would probably encourage, if you have an old laptop, to give this a try. It's pretty cool in a way. And Google's been a leader in these kind of lightweight, kind of netbook kind of laptops, kind of ultralight laptop space. So it's cool to see them move over to offering a lightweight operating system that can run on older hardware in a way. Now, if you're a personal user, the software that they have here will be free for individual users. And if you are a business or a school, you'll have to pay Google for that access. But you get support, obviously, so that's something to keep in mind. But then again, I would, again, encourage anyone who has an old laptop to give this a try. It's pretty cool, if you ask me. It's pretty cool, in a way. And finally, we've crossed the 30-minute mark, in a way. But I gotta mention this pretty cool gadget that is not really a phone or an electric car, kind of. But it's kind of a piece of AV gear, but it's pretty cool what it can do. Epson's created a new regular laser projector, the ProCinema 4K Pro UHD LS12000, as I'll refer to, or the LS12000. It's a brand new projector. It's a laser projector, obviously. It has Epson's 3-chip LCD system, which is pretty cool. But apparently, it gives you zero compromise 4K resolution, and not sort of the upscaled 4K that comes on other projectors, interestingly. Now, apparently, this comes with precision shift glass plate technology, which obviously comes with Epson's 3 LCDs technology, giving you a pretty crispy picture, and obviously strong contrast, if you ask me, in a way. But apparently, the shift glass plate system allows the projector to give you proper 4K resolution, 8.29 million pixel image, and run at high refresh rates, allowing you to do 120 hertz easily, which is pretty cool. Now, interestingly, this, as I said, the three LCDs that do that technology, which is Epson's technology in a way, run at full HD. But as I said, the system is such that it can do full-on 4K, which is pretty cool in a way. It supports HDR10, HLG, and HDR10+, 2700 lumens, that's the luminosity of the projector, and the lamp can last up to 20,000 hours. You have 2.5 million to 1 contrast ratio, so it is really vibrant compared to a regular full HD projector, which is kind of obviously a few years older than this in a way. 120 hertz refresh rate support, great for if you have PS5 or Xbox Series X. 20 millisecond lag, not bad. Full HD scaling. So yeah, it is a proper laser projector, and now it actually does proper 4K. But the technology Epson have here is pretty interesting. Given that, it has its own system, but also that it's using pixel shifting such that it can do proper 4K. So that's pretty impressive. And again, has HDMI 2.1. So if you have a PS5 and you were wanting to get a projector to do full-on 4K gaming, you probably have one. This costs $5,000. It's very expensive compared to Sony's projectors, but but you're getting what you're paying for. In terms of the technology, you get proper 4K, guys. Like that's apparently that's hard to do on projectors compared to regular TVs, because you need to do a lot of like very specific you need pretty specific advances in technology, or you need the overall picture to actually be 4K, to have pixels equivalent to 4K resolution, that is, what Projectus claimed to do 4K, but actually it's Ultra HD. It's kind of like upscaled, kind of, in a way. But here you get proper 4K. But again, pretty cool piece of tech from Epson, nonetheless. All right, we've come to the end of this week's episode. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Sayed_Mahmood99. Follow me there if you can. Share this to your friends and family, in a way. Obviously, subscribe if you're listening right now so you don't miss the next episode. And obviously, you can check out previous episodes after subscribing, sort of, like, such as the last week's episode on the S22 series. Pretty cool, if you ask me, in a way. And yeah, leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. That obviously bumps to show up in the search results. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy Mahmood signing out. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, take care, stay safe, and yeah, and have a wonderful day. All right, thank you for listening. Ciao.